You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Lizzie Stahl has had a four-decade career as a journalist, as a White House correspondent, the moderator of Face the Nation, and for the past 25 years, she's been a correspondent for CBS News' 60 Minutes. She's covered scandals, exposed crimes, broken glass ceilings, and became the first journalist to interview President-elect Trump after the election. So you might be surprised to learn that she says that the most transformative experience of her life has been becoming a grandmother. Her latest book is Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. It's published by Blue Rider Press. I spoke with her last April, and we are replaying that interview for you now. I began by asking her why the subject of grandparenting interested her. She didn't act or look like a stereotypical grandmother.
Well, keep looking, because now that baby boomers are becoming grandparents, they do look younger. Doesn't mean we are younger, but we do look younger because that's what baby boomers do. We look younger. We do have more energy. We're healthier. And grandparents, actually, I'm an old grandparent. Grandparents, the average age is 50. So I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, too, is that grandparents are changing. They, obviously, we're working women. And we are not covered with flower dust, and we're not into dotage, and our hair isn't white, and we don't play canasta all afternoon.
But don't many women dread having someone call them grandma in public?
Depends on how old you are. If you become a grandmother at 50, yes, there's a connotation, and if you're 50, you don't want to be thought of as old and doddering, and it's an image that has to change. But if your daughter makes you wait as long as mine did, by the time it happens, you know, they can call you anything.
What did they call you?
They call me Lolly. And this is embarrassing, but my husband is Pop, so we're Lollipop. Ooh, it's a little cutesy.
And he disclosed in the book that Tom Brokaw's grandchildren don't call him Grandpa either.
He wanted to be Tom. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be Granny. I was so ripe and ready to be a grandmother by the time it happened that I was so into the whole idea. And it was my daughter who said, "You're not a granny." And one of the things I hope to do with the book is change that perception, because it's so faulty.
Weren't you told when you began your career that women on TV disappear at around age 40?
40, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were all told. The group that came in with me, the first, what they call a first wave, because of affirmative action, actually, we were all told that women will not last on television past the age of 40. And I remember even then thinking, well, how did they know? There aren't any women. Who are you judging this by? And I just had a feeling deep in me that we would last as long as the men last.
Well, I was friends for many years with the late Marlene Sanders, who broke some of those rules.
She was the first.
But do you think that it was just based on looks?
As
in the movies?
Yes, totally.
A 60-year-old actor can have an affair with a 20-year-old actress in a movie, and nobody thinks twice about it?
But I think that the people who are saying that about television didn't realize that television comes into people's homes, and that what they really want on television is comfort. And, you know, you're 50 or 60, you're still comfortable, and maybe even more comfortable.
On the other hand, there still aren't a lot of women your age doing the news.
More than you would expect. A lot of the women who came in with me and my group are still there. You look at, Rita Braver's still there, Susan Spencer's still there. So we were the first wave. So
Diane Sawyer.
And Diane Sawyer. Well, she came a little later. But I think that proportionately we're surviving as well as the men.
Well, do you think that is kind of like the Walter Cronkite thing? Has the depth and length of your career given you more power and credibility than others might have?
Power?
You don't have any power?
No. I've never thought I had any power. But people more readily accept an older woman in positions of authority than a younger woman in positions of authority. And the grandmother label actually helps a woman who wants to be a CEO or run the House of Representatives, as Nancy Pelosi did. And, you know, you saw when Nancy Pelosi was sworn in as Speaker, she had all her grandchildren lined up. And I think she understood in a very instinctive way that the maternal authority can be powerful.
Well, you've had a singular career in life. Is your experience as a grandparent really comparable to the typical person's experience?
Well, the typical grandmother's experience, yeah. Well, no, let me admit that. I think my experience is typical to the working woman who becomes a grandmother, because we're a little like the grandfathers of old who felt that they weren't involved enough when their own kids were growing up, and the grandkid comes along, and boy, they plunge in, and everybody, well, the sons particularly look at him and say, well, you didn't do that with me. And I think working women are kind of like those men. We missed a lot with our own kids, and we don't want to miss anything this time around.
A lot of women have a child, they drop out, and then they have a hard time getting back in.
Yeah.
How old were you when your daughter Taylor was born?
35. And so, then she made me wait, so by the time you know it came around.
Yeah. Where were you in your career at that time?
I was covering politics in Washington, in the Washington Bureau. I think I was covering Koreagate. You know, I was covering scandals, let's say.
Did you take her with you when you traveled?
I did, up until the time the teachers at her school said you can't do that anymore. So I think until she was in second grade.
At that time, for a woman in your business, was it important not to ask for concessions because you were a mother?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was always so concerned that they would think that I wasn't as available, that I wasn't as trustworthy, that they couldn't rely on me. And here's the really weird thing. We went through the whole women's movement. We went through the whole women at work movement. And when I got to 60 Minutes, there was a producer on my team, a woman, a young woman. And she came in one day in tears because her kid was sick and she needed to go to the doctor with the kid. I said, go. And she said, I'm always so afraid to ask you. And I said, I'm a mother. What are you talking about? And I made that very clear to everybody I worked with that the kids come first. And she said, I know you say that, but I'm still afraid you'll get the sense that I'm not reliable. And nothing had changed.
Because women have to face this fact that they're going to have to ask for time off more than men generally do.
Yeah, although that's shifting a little. The men are asking for time off more now, too. But the idea that women are still afraid of that was just painful to hear.
My guess is Leslie Stahl, in case you don't recognize that voice. She's written a book called Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. You had a kind of difficult relationship with your mother, a complicated one.
I did.
So when she became a grandparent, did that become a problem for you?
No. As a matter of fact, my mother turned into the sweetest, most caring, most fun grandmother. And like so many daughters, I looked at her and said, who took over that woman? You know, there's a body snatcher around. And then it's happened to me. When we are, whoever we are, whether we were a tough mother or a lenient mother, whatever, we look at those grandchildren and we turn to mush balls, and so do the men.
Yeah. Well,
happens.
When you enter the room and they see you and they start hopping up and down and get all excited.
You're a grandfather?
Yeah.
So you know. It's you know, the first interview I did with a grandmother, someone older than I and had six grandchildren. And I said, what is it? And she said, well, it's unconditional love, and they love you back the same way. She said, that's the secret.
Why didn't your mother feel that way when you were her daughter in your early career? She critiqued your every television appearance, and she said some pretty mean things.
Yeah, she did. That was my mother.
Did she think that she was helping you?
Yes, she did. She was a backstage mother. She was committed to my career, maybe even more than I was. You know, she was one of those really, really smart women who got trapped in the suburbs. She got caught in that generation where there wasn't enough housework because she had a washing machine and a dishwasher and a dryer. And she got into life a little, you know, it was too late to start a career. And she just was stuck. And she knew it. She was very smart and she knew it. And she was determined that I was going to have a career. She used to say to me, no job, no job. You're going to have a profession. I don't care what it is.
But and then she gave you permission to go back to work after you had the baby.
She encouraged it. First, she told me not to have a child. This is a little embarrassing, but she said, they'll ruin your life. And I'm thinking, thanks, Mom. You know, basically telling me that she felt, you know, that my brother and I had held her back, which is probably true. She didn't want me to have children because she thought having a career was the road to happiness. And then she changed her mind.
But given the kind of job you had, all of that stimulation, would it have been a difficult transition to stay home with
yes,
an infant?
I could not have stayed home. If I had stayed home, my child would be the most neurotic human being on the planet. And she's not. She's wonderful and sane. And
is it fair to say that your husband was the stay-at-home parent?
Yes, he was. But he was a hands-off. He didn't hover. He was not a helicopter parent. Mm. And I think that was a good thing for my kid.
Is being a grandparent a second bite at that apple?
Definitely. Definitely. A second chance. And I heard it over and over and over from grandfathers and working women. And if I ever heard that a grandmother wasn't that interested in babysitting, invariably she was a woman who had not worked when she was raising her own children.
Is it easier because you can also hand the baby back?
You know, I hear that a lot.
You're not there during the colicky periods.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I don't think that's what's going on. I think that the love is, it's there. And if they wanted me to change a diaper, I'd be happy to change the diapers. I think there's something much deeper and physical going on and something to do with our legacy. I wrote the book to find out what that connection is and why it's so deep.
How does the balance of power shift between mother and daughter when the one makes the other a grandmother?
Oh, that's huge. So you're the mother, and, you know, you put your foot down. Still, they're 35, and you're still telling them what to do and so forth. And then the baby comes along, and then your child has the key to what you want more than anything in the world, which is time with your grandchildren. And we know it, and we start sort of governing ourselves, biting our tongue, walking on eggshells.
You make the offer, I'm free next Friday. No, we're doing something.
Yeah. You want
it hurts.
You want to babysit. If they don't want you to babysit, you're crushed. Really, it's unexpected. When it happens, you look at yourself and say, what's going on, which is why wanted to write the book.
And you're used to speaking truth to power, so is it difficult to keep quiet?
Yes, it's really hard. Oh, my God. My daughter did the sleep training thing, which is where they let the baby cry till they learn to fall asleep. And I just happened to be there when she started that. And it was killing me, just killing me. We didn't do that with Taylor, my daughter. And I kept wanting to say, look, we didn't do that with you and you turned out okay. That line, you know, that they hate, it's like nails on a blackboard. Just not saying anything took everything in my willpower.
I'm speaking with Leslie Stahl, who's written a book, quite a departure from her early work. This one, Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Signs of the New Grandparenting. It's published by Blue Rider Press, and we'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with a rebroadcast of a conversation I had with Leslie Stahl last April. She's written a book called Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. It's published by Blue Rider Press. During the first half of the interview, listeners began to write in to respond to things she had said, including that she felt she didn't have any power as a journalist, and I asked her if she truly meant that.
I took the word to mean that if I do a piece, things will change. And more often than not, in fact, most of the time, I do a story and things don't change. So I see myself as powerless a lot, because how come I told you that what's happening is harmful and you're not rising up with pitchforks?
Well, I've had that experience as well. I've thought, I'm going to blow the lid off of this thing, and then the next day it's exactly the same. I'm sure that a few listeners were shocked by what I revealed.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a humbling experience for
yes,
a broadcaster.
Exactly. And you say, well, so much for my muscles, right?
Well, we've been talking about being a grandma. How have you liked being a mother-in-law?
Oh, that's funny. First of all, when I became a mother-in-law, I thought it was hilarious because well, gosh, mother-in-laws are so maligned. Every joke that's really funny is about a mother-in-law. So I made a great deal of fun of myself. The other thing is my poor son-in-law did not know what to call me. Thank God they had a child, because now he can call me what the granddaughters call me.
Mm-hmm.
But I love my son-in-law. He lived with my husband and me. He took a job in New York. My daughter lived in L.A., and he came and lived with us while he had that job. It was over a year. So he became my son. We loved him.
But
and then they
there,
got married, thank goodness.
Aren't there studies that show that a couple is incrementally happier the further they live away from their in-laws?
It's on the women's side.
Uh-huh.
It's very much the women. The marriage is better because the women clash. And you know something? That is universal. That tension between mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law is universal, and it's age-old. In China and India, all the soap operas are about that tension in both countries. But it's almost normal to have that difficulty. And so if the mother-in-law doesn't hold her tongue, and if she isn't walking on eggshells and being very careful and doing everything not to be critical— there's going to be a difficult situation, because that daughter-in-law could withhold the children. And that happens a lot.
And even if you're not being critical, I could see a little jealousy creeping in sometimes when the grandchild seems to respond more warmly to grandma, grandpa, than to mom and dad, although in the end, of course, it's mother and dad who are the most important in their lives.
That situation is more likely between the two grandmothers,
mm-hmm.
you know?
They're
thinking
competing.
That they love her more or vice versa. And I actually delved into that. That becomes part of the book, too, that innate competition with the other grandparents that you don't want to have, and yet you, in the back of your mind, it's just sitting there. Do they want to spend more time with them? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, in this age of divorce, step-grandparents are also part of the picture.
Uh-huh.
Do they play a lesser role?
Well, it depends, of course. It depends on the relationship with the parents, once again. But some step-grandparents have the same deep, total-body thrill with a grandchild as I did, exactly the same. And, you know, when Blue Rider Press suggested I write a book about being a grandmother, I thought I didn't have a full book. And then I realized I have a lot of friends who are step-grandmothers, and they are just as crazy gaga over the edge of the cliff as I am. And I said, oh, I could write a chapter on them. And then I talked to grandfathers like Tom Brokaw and others, and I thought, oh, I can write a chapter on grandfathers.
And Whoopi Goldberg.
And Whoopi Goldberg, whose mother basically raised her daughter. Oh, I can write a chapter on that. So it evolved. There are all different kinds of situations, all different kinds. And it's rich. It's a topic that can fill a book.
And then, of course, there are the financial disparities. Sometimes the grandma has a lot more money than
the younger generation.
The younger generation, or vice versa.
Well, more often than not, granny has the money. More often than not, both young parents have to work today. Childcare alone will eat up an entire salary of one of the parents. So imagine you have two parents working, and granny not only babysits, she wants to babysit, and she doesn't charge anything. And there is nobody those young parents trust more than a grandmother or a grandfather. Grandfathers are in there too, by the way. And in fact, I had a lot of young mothers tell me that their father is better with the children than their mother. So grandfathers are great nannies.
Does money matter in the competition between the pairs of grandparents?
It can. It can. I had some grandparents open up to me off, don't use my name, don't tell who I am, but the other grandparents have more money and they have a swimming pool, or they take the grandchildren to the Caribbean or whatever, and they have an edge. And that's why I say that there is competition, and it's, you don't want it, but it's there.
I'm speaking with Leslie Stahl. She's written a book called Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. It is published by Blue Rider Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I mentioned Whoopi Goldberg. She pretty much depended on her mother to bring up her child. Did she feel that she was incompetent, or was she just concerned about her career?
Yeah, the latter. She had been doing stand-up comedy at clubs, trying to get a career going. And all of a sudden like that, everybody wanted Whoopi Goldberg. Mike Nichols offered to produce a one-woman show for her on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And she wanted it. She wanted it. And she had a little girl.
That was her breakthrough moment.
That was the breakthrough. And everything tumbled after that. She was in The Color Purple. Steven Spielberg came a-calling. It just was skyrocketing overnight. And her mother lived in Harlem. She lived in out in Berkeley. And she asked her mother, Stanford, Berkeley. She asked her mother to leave Harlem, where she'd been forever, and move to California, which her mother did. And her mother raised her daughter.
Does Whoopi say she regretted it at all?
Whoopi she expressed what had happened with guilt. I don't think she regretted it, if you can understand the distinction there.
What about your situation with your husband? Was he filling a similar role to Whoopi's mother?
Yeah, he was the parent.
And the kids grew up okay, so
the one
he was
kid
a good
grew
parent.
Up great, as a matter of fact, and he was a gifted father. He was a gifted parent. You know what my husband did? He read every single solitary book she was ever assigned from first grade through senior in college. Hmm. So that they could discuss what she was interested in or working on.
Michelle Obama's mother moved into the White House
yep.
to take care of the kids.
Yep. You talk about a mother-in-law situation. But the president loves his mother-in-law. He says a lot.
Did she feel obligated to enforce Michelle's all-organic menus and no TV rules?
Au contraire. And this is true of most grandmothers, where they're looking at their kids who are saying, no TV, no iPad, no ice cream, no this, no sugar. And we just ignore them. We totally ignore them.
Well, Barack Obama was raised by his maternal grandparents,
right.
So he probably appreciates the
right.
situation.
Although, you know, that was not a healthy situation. But his grandparents, white grandparents, completely loved him. And that's a grandparent's main job. That's the main thing, is just to love them. And so he got that from a grandmother and a grandfather. They both just adored him and doted on him. And in large swaths of his life, raised him.
Now, you mentioned the parents having all sorts of rules and grandparents breaking them. You taught your grandchild to play on an iPad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, the dirty looks from my daughter.
And then you play games involving sugar?
I do.
You're evil.
I'm evil. But I have to tell all grannies listening to me, there's this app, and it's called Cookie Doodle. And there's a new one called Cake Doodle. And you can teach them how to cook online. They break the eggs. They stir. They cook. It's heaven. And you'll be just having as much fun as they have playing this Cookie Doodle thing.
You did a feature on a housing unit that was designed specifically for grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. What kinds of services and support are available to them?
This is a unique building. It's in the Bronx. It was built by the city because there were two waves of situations where grandparents, mainly grandmothers, were called in to take over full legal custody of the kids because of abuse, neglect, or death, or parent in jail. And there was, when I say waves, the population of grandparents with custody spiked twice, the crack epidemic and then the recession. And so the city built this apartment building that's beautiful in one of the worst neighborhoods in the entire city, 50 units, that's it. And grandparents get all kinds of help. They have tutoring classes and how to talk to teenagers. They have health lessons and nutrition and psychology, everything. It's just brilliant. And I can't believe it hasn't been copied around the country.
Can we spend a few moments on the TV career and journalism in general? Because we mentioned earlier that you do something and you think you're going to change the world. You did a piece in 60 Minutes about Ronald Reagan that aired one night before the election that criticized his budget cuts for institutions like nursing homes. And they thanked you the next
day? They thanked me the next day. Actually, I was the White House correspondent then. I wasn't yet at 60 Minutes, so I was covering Ronald Reagan. They called me and loved it. And I said, what? It was a negative piece. And they said, well, you had ran all those pictures of Reagan. Pictures. He looked great. He looked young. Age was an issue back then for him. He looked vital. And I said, but didn't you hear what I said? And they said, oh, well, you haven't figured this out yet. But if the pictures are powerful and they contradict what you're saying, no one hears you because the pictures overwhelm. And it was something none of us in television really understood until I told everybody what the White House was realizing that we didn't realize.
Well, they say any coverage is good coverage. We pick and choose. There are these unintended consequences. For example, when Rick Perry couldn't remember the third agency he wanted to shut down, that hurt him. In the case of Donald Trump, when he talked about the Department of Environmental, the DEP, it hasn't hurt him at all.
Well, I think that the difference between what happened with me and what you're talking about is there are no pictures involved in what you're talking about, and we only have our hearing. And then that becomes a wholly different experience. If you're watching something, sometimes what's going into your eyes doesn't go up to your head where you think. It goes into your gut where you feel. The eye goes to the gut. It's interesting. And you just get impressions, and you're not thinking. You're just letting it wash over you, and judgments are formed. But if it's a debate, you are listening. And Donald Trump speaks with so much energy and wit. I'm convinced his humor is a huge part of his appeal. I saw him imitating Ted Cruz, and it was terrible, and it was hilarious. It was hilarious, but it was awful. It was a terribly boorish, bullying thing to do. And yet, really, it was stand-up comic funny. And people are being amused by him.
Well, people have been complaining for a long time that the line between journalism and entertainment has been crossed. And I guess it's happening. Maybe it always was there in politics as well.
Well, I remember Don Hewitt, my boss when I joined 60 Minutes, and the man who created 60 Minutes, was always being accused of blurring that line at 60 Minutes. And today, we think of 60 Minutes as the old journalism, the old style journalism, and we're very proud of that. But when it started, people said, oh, my God, that's too much entertainment. It's in 60 minutes.
Didn't one of your journalist friends say of his grandson, it's a pleasure to be around someone who always tells the truth?
Yeah, that was Bob Simon.
Uh-huh.
Bob Simon was so smitten with his grandson. Yeah, that's sad.
Yes, it was. He was also a wonderful guest.
And a wonderful person.
What about the fact that grandmothers are much more likely to live longer than grandfathers?
Women more than
yes.
men. But you know that gap is shrinking? I just read this this past week in some article that it's been true for years and years and years, and all of a sudden the grandparents are catching up to us. Or we're sinking back. I don't know, but it's that gap is narrowing.
Although longer than other primates,
oh,
humans.
Way longer, and yeah. That's part of my book, because
that's why I brought it up.
That's why. Oh, okay, clever. People have been scientists, anthropologists have been wondering why we are one of the very few animals on the planet who women live past menopause, because in other animals, they die when they can no longer reproduce.
Darwin wondered about that.
Yeah, because all we're doing is taking food from the mouths of the rest of the family. But the theory is that grandmothers exist and live past menopause in order to babysit. And we did for millennia. Until the Industrial Revolution. And I think that part of what I'm feeling, all this deep emotion, is my craving for the way things are supposed to be. I'm supposed to be babysitting. That's my job. That's why I'm here. And when we don't get to babysit, something's gnawing at us. I mean, I'm so you're smiling at me, but I'm serious.
No, I've observed this in so many people, including myself.
Yeah, and grandfathers too.
Leslie Stahl, her latest book, Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting, published by Blue Rider Press. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Oh, this has been more fun, and I've loved it. You read the book.